Morning. Thank you very much, Mark and Linda, for the invite. It's thrilling to be here for only for a short time, and I understand I have to watch out for potholes and other dangers lurking in Nashville. For those of you who don't know where Kaai-Leuven is, we're about 20 miles south of Brussels, Belgium. We've been around since 1425, which, as you may guess, is not always an advantage. So it's it may even work more slowly than an EPA at Kaai-Leuven. This may be the most important slide. It's the slide with my email addresses on. So the second one is my bar address, and I've been under strict instructions to tell you that email me at Kaai-Leuven is not necessarily cheaper than emailing me at the bar. So it's take your pick there. That's our university library, which is always too nice to pull out for an American audience. It's a library which has been destroyed twice, once by the Germans in 1914, and then once by the RAF, bizarrely, in 1944, when precision bombing was even less precise than it is in these days. And you built it up again, so thanks for all of you. If you ever come to Leuven, you should look for your graduate school or wherever you had your alma mater and see whether there's a mark there of your school and see how much you contributed to building this thing up again. My children just know it as the Hogwarts School of Magic, but it's actually the Central Library. My children also know that other thing there, the monument, which is a blown-up sized beetle, not a nano-sized beetle, and they know it as a bug, so there's not much respect in terms of the scientific element. Well, what will I do with you today? I'll have four issues. I'll probably look mostly at the third and the fourth. And the fourth, I think, interestingly, throws up a few issues on governance which perhaps are different from what we've heard so far, in that in the European sense, governance is not necessarily understood in the same way as it is here. But we'll see that as we go along. Right, I'll skip this element, just perhaps to point out, when people talk about nano law or regulation of nanotechnology, typically they actually talk about the research and development and the funding and how you get the funding. And even if you were to Google for, say, nanotechnology regulation, the R&D comes up first. So it's still, I suspect, and I imagine that's the same in the US and in Australasia as well, people think mostly still in terms of research and development. And that's the same with the scientists at our universities. When I talk to Kaai-Leuven, we're not so big in nano biomedical issues. We're quite strong in nano microelectronics. Some of you may be familiar with IMEC, for instance, or with Moshalkov's work on mechanical engineering. When I talk to them about the law, they will say, oh yes, how exactly can we get that fifth or sixth research funding from the commission, and how does the law work there? They're not really concerned at this stage about any sort of regulatory constraints, and even if they are, then they simply ask me to tell them, to identify them, and they will abide by them. So that's not so much of a sort of interest in the purely scientific community. But we'll skip the elements on R&D. A few topics there, perhaps, which I should like to highlight on the element of why we should care about the law. I suppose the third bullet point there is one that often comes up in nanotechnology regulation, and that's the comparison with biotechnology. And of course, from a European, especially from a European industry point of view, that's a very valid comparison. Regardless of the sort of regulatory and also scientific exposure, health and safety issues that may or may not divide biotech from nanotech, of course, biotech has been a huge debacle in the EU because of the fact that we didn't have the regulatory framework that we thought was appropriate, and hence put the industry on hold for quite a number of years, to the extent that most of the European public simply don't want especially GM applications. And that, of course, is a regulatory failure, whether one is or is not in favour of GM. It is a regulatory favour which you would like to avoid with nanotechnology. And that certainly is a main driver in the EU for wanting a regulatory framework, for wanting the law to be in place as soon as possible. And industry is certainly a very active driver in that respect. The last element there, a chilling effect, is also an interesting concern and probably relates to that, but mostly to trade law issues. When you when you look, of course, at the recent WTO ruling on the EU's GM regime, one of the concerns there within EU circles, especially within EU environmental circles, is that the very presence of international trade law and the very threat of international trade law would in itself have a chilling effect on the kind of precaution that we would like to take. In other words, and it typically is an American industry approach to trying to scuffle EU regulatory policy initiatives is by saying you mustn't let this go ahead because it will be WTO incompatible. That happened with REACH, the chemicals policy. We'll talk about that in a minute. It's also happened in other areas, including waste regulation. So what does the law look like at the moment in the EU? Just have there a few elements. Just as in the US, we don't have a specific overarching nano law, evidently, and we may never have one. It's exactly what we're trying to find out. That of course doesn't mean that we are at the moment not regulating the technology. One of the foremost instruments which you may imagine is precisely is product liability. From an EU point of view, and that isn't on this slide, but from an EU point of view, product liability is somewhat tricky because there is a directive, there's a European directive on product liability, but it only includes minimum harmonization, i.e. it only obliges member states to adopt a certain amount of minimum standards, but most member states go beyond that. And most member states will have a product liability regime that is determined by their case law. In some instances, it's determined by centuries-old case law. So it's a very difficult core of law to actually break into from a Commission point of view. It's one of the missions which the Commission has in trying to regulate nano is precisely avoiding that we'll have 25 different regulatory regimes, amongst others, because of these product liability issues. There are some other usual suspects. GMO is one, even though it's not really a one that will be very important, given that most of the nanomaterials would not be considered to be life issues, except for some applications. One comparison, which is one instrument which certain groups look at to regulate nanotechnologies, REACH. REACH is the new up-and-coming chemicals policy of the EU. It's an acronym which stands for Registration, Evaluation, Assessment and Restriction of Chemicals. Bizarrely, the R of restrictions didn't make it into the acronym, but there you are. And it's being developed at the moment, and it includes, of course, a potentially dramatic development in terms of regulation of nanotechnology, and that is the reversal of burden of proof. So rather than EU governments, together with the Commission, having to take measures should they think that chemicals are unsafe, it will be up to manufacturers to prove that chemicals are safe before they may be marketed in the EU. So you can imagine that is a bit of a watershed in terms of chemicals approach in the European Union. And it is certainly viewed by some as a model for nanotechnology as well. But if that were to be rolled out in nano, it would of course somewhat delay quite a few of those applications that are being planned with nanotechnology. The liability directive, I just put it there because one mustn't confuse it with what is typically seen as liability. So if you think of liability, product liability in a nano sense, you have to think this other directive, which is minimum harmonization. Don't think the environmental liability directive, because that is a very it's a directive which was adopted after yonks of negotiation, I think about 20 years. It started off very ambitiously, trying to regulate all sorts of environmental liability, but it ended up being a very embryonic sort of harmonization, mostly focusing on biodiversity, which of course may have some nano applications. And that is an interesting difference there with REACH, because in the eventual format of the liability directive, the focus shifted from private operators to public authorities. So in the liability directive, it's the first and foremost responsibility of public authorities to clean up, and then afterwards potentially to claim that back from industry, rather than the reverse, which is the case in REACH. There's a few other parts of legislation called supply. There's the food law application, which applies for novel foods potentially in terms of nanotechnology. There's the new Food Safety Authority, which is a regulatory agency. We'll come back to regulatory agencies later. And there's also, of course, a wide range of nanobiomedical applications and directives that apply in that area, and the same for cosmetics. The cosmetics regime in the EU is fairly similar to the US regime. In principle, no prior authorization except for a few active ingredients. And one would imagine, but I haven't come across it, one would imagine that for cosmetics, there should have been some which should have received prior authorization under the EU cosmetics regime, but I haven't actually seen any of those authorizations, even though it is claimed that they are on the market. So I'm not sure what's happened there. Okay, in terms of how the law is going to be developed, what the Commission are doing at the moment, together with the Member States, is firstly chewing out an enormous amount of policy documents, and you will have seen quite a few of those. Some of those are in response to the 2004 Royal Society report on nanotechnology. Others are more coming out of the Commission itself, the action plan, the consultation exercise, etc. But that obviously is not hard law. It is policy, and it is especially setting out the way in which we're going to approach this issue rather than actually regulating anything at this stage. How we're going to develop, of course, will to a large extent depend on how we generally approach risk analysis, and it was addressed earlier as well, the various steps of risk analysis. I just want to point out a few elements which you may or may not be familiar with in terms of difference in the EU and the US in their risk analysis approach. Firstly, in the EU, we very much look at these four steps as being very linear, very much defined, and we typically assign different responsibilities for each of those steps. And in particular, risk management, i.e. where we sit around the table, review all the scientific evidence that we have and then decide what we're going to do with it, ban something or just let it go ahead and regulate it or regulate it. This is a step which the Member States as well as the Commission view very much as a political step. So that is a step. Risk management in the EU is a responsibility of politicians, not of scientists. The Commission would even say it's a responsibility of elected politicians, but they would include themselves in that. So that's a bit of a bit of a paradox there. But that has an enormous impact, of course, the US industry would certainly claim that, on how we are actually eventually managing risk. And that probably makes the whole thing also more sensitive towards a precautionary principle. It would seem that MPs and MEPs, members of the European Parliament, as well as national governments, are quite sensitive towards precautionary issues and what their constituency tells them about this. That indeed does make the EU more prone for precautionary measures, which of course may also apply in the nano sphere. I put the element there of input of regulatory agencies. It's probably to a large degree a completely different issue, but it is certainly the case in the EU that we are increasingly using these regulatory agencies, but in a very haphazard way. So we sort of create them. The European Food Safety Authority is a good example. The Environmental Agency is another, and now the new Chemicals Bureau in REACH. But we don't really have an overall regime as to how we approach these agencies. What's your sort of, what is the access to data of those agencies? What are appeals procedures? How do these agencies go about in regulating? And certainly in REACH, they will have a very important say. It's very, very, very much of the detail they are lacking, and it's something which the EU will have to address fairly soon. Then I come to the last part, which is the kind of governance part. Now, intuitively, when we sort of think of governance, we think of proper governance in terms of how does one go about making sure that a regulatory process is fair, is open, is transparent, etc. Governance in the EU started off as a negative thing. It was a response to a wide range of scandals in the European Commission, which led to one of the Commission even having to resign collectively. Response to that was this 2001 white paper on governance. Now, the main element of this is trying to reconnect the EU to its citizens. It's, It's been a problem ever since the EU was created. And as part of that exercise, the EU believes that better regulation would be an appropriate instrument in trying to make sure that citizens do reconnect. Bizarrely, and I put it there, what you see, if you were to look on the EU Commission website, is very good in that respect. If you go to the governance pages of the Commission, you will have a really neat overview of all the things that they've been doing in this area, and you will then observe that what they've been doing in this area so far is mostly bringing out an enormous amount of papers, policy documents, communications, etc., which hopefully in the second stage will then lead to somewhat of an improvement. And we'll go through some of those now, and some of the elements which will drive this new governance, and which will certainly have an impact on nano regulation as well. One of them is this Aarhus. I'm not Danish, so I probably pronounce it wrongly, but the Aarhus or Aarhus process. Aarhus is a convention of the Council of Europe. Council of Europe is an institution which has nothing to do with the EU. It's a post-war, Second World War, that is, institution to do mostly with security issues, but it is increasingly active in the area of environmental issues. And it's come up with this Aarhus Convention, which gives increasing rights to citizens at large to participate into the decision-making process and also to have access to data in that decision-making process. And that is now being rolled out across the EU, including the member states, going down to the very local level, but also within the EU institutions itself. So it obliges the EU to increasingly, to involve increasingly action groups, civic society, etc., in their regulatory process. That will have a certain important role to play. There's a classic problem there, which is the same in Washington. Brussels has, I think, about something like 19,000 lobbyists. Probably a full 10 of those are environmental activists. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's certainly not more than 100. So the typical issue there of how to make sure that even if you give those participatory rights, that you actually effectively have NGOs participating. And secondly, but on top of that issue of involving environmental people rather than just industry, within industry there's a serious concern of how to make sure that in our technology we don't just look at the big players, that were named earlier, but that we include SMEs as well, small and medium-sized enterprises, that we include university spin-offs, who would not normally be within the scope of lobbying in Brussels, but who need to be on board if we're going to regulate this properly. The last element there is a small amount of commission officials. The typical example is always to say that the Commission itself has about 22,000 officials. The French Ministry for Agriculture has 19,000 already. Mm-hmm. So it shows you the scale of policy issues that the Commission have to deal with a fairly limited amount of people if you look at all the issues that they have to address. Expert consultation is going to be improved. There's a policy document there. Again, it's on that website. Perhaps that one element there, the challenge of reigning in the member states, I've already mentioned it, but it is also at the core of this GMO issue within the World Trade Organization. It wasn't so much about the Commission having failed WTO disciplines, it was more about member states running away with precautionary measures and then coming under the rebuke of the World Trade Organization. Co and self-regulation, and I come to my conclusion very soon, co and self-regulation, i.e., giving industry the starting point in regulating themselves and then letting the Commission perhaps marginally intervene in this, has been mooted for nano, but probably will not be the model that we're going to look at. So we're involving industry as well as NGOs in regulating nano, but it'll be by legislation proper, command and control, and not by self or co-regulation. Finally, I put a quote there of a widely abused author, of course, Adam Smith. Most of his quotes are completely taken out of context, and I'm sure this one is as well. but sometimes when practicing in Europe and also researching in Europe, it is a feeling that we sometimes get in terms of regulation, not just by the European Commission, but also by the member states, and also having to deal with these different levels of regulation. On top of that, there's also activism of local courts, etc. So it's a bit of a tricky exercise, but we'll be getting there. Thanks.